Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for May 8th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
And we're back again with our daily sojourn into the life of Sherlock Holmes. The adventures continue in this, the collection, The Return of Sherlock Holmes. Today's mystery, The Adventure of the Solitary Cyclist. This one was published in January of 1904 and is a little bit different from some of our other stories, right, Chip?
Oh, yeah. It looks like it stars Pepe Le Pew on it. It's an awful, awful, well, eventually we get to the awful side of it. But my thought initially on reading this was we have our character kind of show up and kind of say what her challenge is that Sherlock Holmes and Watson are going to solve. And I was just thinking, did Doyle kind of back into this story with this, what looks like it's just a mild request. Like, I've got this person following on my bicycle when I go from the home that I'm working at to the train station. And when I arrive back from the train station back to this home where I work, I mean, that seems, well, first of all, mysterious, but is it Sherlock Holmes mysterious?
So I like that question because I do think there's something a little bit odd about this. On the other hand, this young woman feels unsafe, right? Mm-hmm. And turns to Watson and Holmes, who we have seen help out a lot of different young women who feel unsafe. And there's something here that reminds me of the Copper Beeches, where that young woman was also a governess who was being overpaid, you know, in a rather isolated setting. And so, I don't know. I mean, I totally hear what you're saying, but at the same time, I'm like, it's kind of within the realm of what Holmes and Watson do. And even in the intro to this story, from the years 1894 to 1901 inclusive, Mr. Sherlock Holmes was a very busy man. It is safe to say that there was no public case of any difficulty in which he was not consulted during those 8 years. And there were hundreds of private cases, some of them of the most intricate and extraordinary character, in which he played a prominent part. So I think Watson's almost anticipating your objection. And he's like, hey, you guys know he was involved in every single big thing that happened during this period. But he was also involved in lots and lots of little cases that no one would have ever heard of.
Interesting, maybe? Pam, is your connection to the Copper Beeches. Do you remember the name of the young lady in that story?
Oh, shoot. I don't. Do you?
I do now that I looked it up. It was Violet Hunter. So this is the second
use. Violet again.
Yes. Oh, how interesting is that?
Why does Doyle hate purple?
And love red. He loves red hair. I know.
How interesting is that, that we have this connection of these two young ladies in peril and Doyle chooses the name Violet for both of them.
Nice catch, Steve. I like that. And their situation is rather similar, right?
Yeah. 2 points for Gryffindor. Your house will be well rewarded, Steve.
Good.
Oh, by the way, my children feel super confident that Holmes is Slytherin, but they can't agree on Watson. I say definitely Gryffindor, but Hufflepuff. I don't know.
Well, that seems like that would be a question we could ask the listeners. They can send that to us. Which
house? I like that.
Will Watson?
Does everyone agree that Holmes is Slytherin? I mean, that seems solid.
He loves power. Yes, I would say that. That's a, and even the description of how his looks.
Yes. Miss Violet Smith. Let's not ignore her. So that's really interesting. Miss Violet Hunter, Miss Violet Smith. What do you think of Miss Violet Smith, my friends?
It is very interesting to me how much Doyle tells us how beautiful this young lady is, that she is noted for her beauty, what, 4 times in the opening of this story?
Well, she's tall, but otherwise she's just repeatedly referred to as beautiful. We don't have any details about, like, what exactly constitutes her beauty. Just beautiful and tall.
Use your imagination. There you go.
Even Holmes notes her beauty with the caveat that she looks healthy. I don't know how many times you've heard somebody refer to somebody as looking healthy to refer to their good looks, but this is what Holmes does here.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, Steve, because this is represents a shift in how we think of female beauty at the turn of the century. So a beautiful Victorian woman would not have met our notions of health, right? Would have been pale, very, very slim. And so here we have like, I mean, Violet Smith is athletic, right? She's a very serious cyclist. And so this note of like what Holmes thinks is beautiful might represent this shifting notion of athleticism and health as more beautiful than like wearing a corset.
And a master of the arts. She plays instruments.
Right. She is a music teacher. And that certainly plays into this whole concept of the well-rounded person of the Victorian era. And applying it to a female character is very interesting here.
Well, yes, she's ready to be a governess, right? Mm-hmm.
Her father died, leaving her family very poor. She had an uncle in South Africa who also passed away, we find out. And, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Well, he wasn't actually dead when they told her he was. But.
Oh, that's why my memory...
He dies later.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
That's all part right. of the plot.
Ah, dun, dun, dun.
But yeah, Miss Violet Smith is definitely a new woman, very much like Mina Harker from Dracula or like Miss Violet Hunter. You know, she doesn't have a man to protect her at this time. She does have a suitor that she is planning to marry eventually, but she can make her own way.
So she's beautiful, she's educated, and she is well-rounded a knowledgeable person. That seems like this is the springboard of what will ultimately be the one's right to vote and you know, taking other types of positions and things of that nature.
She's a product of the 1890s first wave of feminism. Absolutely.
She has several suitors, though, not just Cyril Morton, the electrical engineer who she is planning to marry in the summer. We have these other guys who are very creepy with their affections.
Well, I was going to say, eventually, famous electrical engineer. I don't know how that could be.
Well, we're going to talk about that ending, Chip. I have some things to say. So these two guys who've come to her and told her that they knew her uncle in South Africa, and they say he has died. Now, it's not exactly true. But Mr. Woodley seemed to me to be a most odious person. He was forever making eyes at me. So this is the creepy guy with the red mustache. And then we have Mr. Carruthers, her employer, who's a wealthy man, quote, deeply interested in South African gold shares. And so, again, we have this notion that, like, some bad things have happened off the continent, and now people returning to England are marked by their experiences elsewhere in the world, which we've seen many times. So when Holmes asks her if she has suitors, she says that Mr. Carruthers has never said anything. He is a perfect gentleman, but a girl always knows. He's very kind, very musical, and we had most pleasant evenings together. But she feels like he does have an interest in her.
Well, you know, the woman's intuition, once again, mm-hmm. comes to play. Mm-hmm. Guys don't have that. Only women.
Oh, Holmes has some intuitions here and there.
And Watson faints. He's very
Only
sensitive.
Once.
Only once. He reports
fainted
first
one
and
time.
Last time ever.
Don't worry. We'll figure out how Watson has failed Holmes in just a few minutes.
Well, did that make you guys laugh?
Oh my God. Oh, yes.
You know, it's funny because before we started the show, Steve, you had mentioned that like the dancing men was really kind of fun and funny. And it's so, you know, those little guys are so cute, the cipher. And this is such a dark story, but it doesn't start out as a dark story, right? It starts out with a sort of similarly like, you know, it's kind of an outlandish story. Even the title, The Solitary Cyclist, it sounds kind of fun.
It's a light mystery. Who's following me? I'm riding a bike. Yay. I'm going home to see my mom.
And then it takes a very dark turn. Yeah.
Right. But it's funny because we get the humor where Holmes is super busy. He doesn't even really want to see this beautiful young woman who appears with her cycling tail because he's working on something else. And so he says, Watson, you're going to go investigate. He's doing his own thing. So Watson goes to investigate. And when he comes back, you guys must have laughed too at how Holmes describes Watson's investigation.
We're raiding Watson here. He is being very mean to Watson.
Your hiding place, my dear Watson, was very faulty. You should have been behind the hedge. Then you would have had a close view of this interesting person. As it is, you were some hundreds of yards away and can tell me even less than Miss Smith. She thinks she does not know the man. I am convinced she does. Why otherwise should he be so desperately anxious that she should not get so near as to see his features? You describe him as bending over the handlebar. Concealment again, you see. You really have done remarkably badly. He returns to the house, and you want to find out who he is? You come to a London house agent? And so Watts is like, what should I have done? And Holmes reels off a big list of things he should have done. Well, well, my dear sir, don't look so depressed, says Holmes. We can do little more until next Saturday. And in the meantime, I may make one or two inquiries myself. And so poor Watson, who's done what he can.
Done everything wrong. All of it wrong.
Everything.
And you know what? He didn't even go to the public house to get a beer. You know, that's all I'm going to say.
That's what was Holmes's idea, was the best way to find information in a small town is to go to the pub and talk to the locals.
Right. Which is, the next week, exactly what Holmes does. And this, I thought, was even more funny than the way he berates Watson. Holmes goes out. When he comes back, he's got a cut lip and a goose egg on his head. And so then Watson explains Holmes's description. He was immensely tickled by his own adventures and laughed heartily as he recounted them. I get so little active exercise that it is always a treat, said he. You are aware that I have some proficiency in the good old British sport of boxing. Occasionally, it is of service. Today, for example, I should have come to very ignominious grief without it. The next few minutes were delicious. Delicious! He's describing this fist fight. It was a straight left against the slogging ruffian. I emerged as you see me. Mr. Woodley went home in a cart. So ended my country trip, and it must be confessed that, however enjoyable, my day on the Surrey border has not been much more profitable than your own. So he tells this whole story of his fight. It's, I think, rather hilarious. And then it turns out he didn't learn anything either.
Woodley is the ruffian that was the one that we were the most creeped out by. And here he is getting into a fist fight with Sherlock Holmes in this pub. So
I say, dear old man, put your fist up. Let's go at it. Come on.
Yeah. So he is a bad guy. So bad. How bad is he? So bad that he forces Miss Violet Smith into marriage. There is this unfrocked clergyman who is also a blackguard, and boy, they kidnap her, and they say they have a license, and that this clergyman has performed the marriage ceremony, and they are now married.
And you know, this is a crime that's very common in the American dime novels, the forced marriage. And of course, I mean, this is another frame for rape, right? And so this notion of, you know, this blackguard of a clergy person, and sometimes it's not even a real clergyman at all, or an unfrocked one, who's called in to perform this fake marriage that will then allow the man control over a woman's body. And so this is, as you said, a super dark turn and a very, very common crime in American detective fiction of the same period.
So it's common in the fiction. Mm-hmm. Is it common in real life? Do you go steal a wife?
I don't think so. I don't know.
I just study the fiction. It just seems so bizarre, but you're right. It's just in the story.
Yeah.
As a allegory to rape, I mean, the commonality of the act of rape is certainly a thing. Maybe not the paperwork part.
So if you would have written about rape, maybe it would have been too much for a family magazine.
Right.
But That's exactly right. Okay. That's exactly. Okay. So I think that the forced marriage is just a way to talk about rape without talking about rape, right?
Okay.
So we get to this scene. Holmes and Watson rush to the scene, and Holmes, Watson, and Mr. Carruthers arrive in a lovely glad of greensward surrounded by ancient trees. We still get a little bit of beautiful description here from Doyle, a little bit of color in this very dark part of the story. We see Violet drooping and faint, a handkerchief tied around her mouth. Mr. Woodley, a brutal, heavy-faced, red-mustached young man, his gaitered legs parted wide, one arm akimbo, and the other waving a riding crop, his whole attitude suggestive of a triumphant bravado. Wow. This is a dark scene here.
And it kind of feels like we've stepped into a play. Do you know what I mean? Like, Watson Holmes and Mr. Carruthers, they're like, hey, you're the guy in the bicycle. Yeah, but I'm trying to protect her. And then they come into this almost like a little stage where we have this false marriage that's just been performed. And, you know, Violet has been drugged. Woodley's like waving a riding crop. And Mr. Williamson, the unfrocked clergyman, it really feels like a play all of a sudden. And especially the lines we get next.
Yes. Woodley, this is
everybody's got a gun in this play.
Right. They're all holding guns and they're shouting at each other, and these lines are just ridiculous in the middle of this dark scene. They get there and Woodley says, "You're too late. She's my wife." And Carruthers replies, "No, she's your widow."
And shoots. I mean, and he shoots Woodley.
It's almost as Vince McMahon from the World Wrestling Federation could have written these types of lines.
Well, and again, this is straight out of an American Dime novel where everyone pulls out a gun. And so, and this kind of line, which we still see today, right? We see this kind of line.
Holmes says, "Here, go get the police. Until the police come, I must detain you under my personal custody." Like this, this is so melodramatic. This is beyond the melodrama of anything that we've read from Sherlock Holmes up until this point.
And later on, they're sitting there and they're like, "And we're going to, well, you can tell me what happened, or I will tell you what happened. You tell me."
Yes. And you've got to love Watson's description of Holmes as he takes people under his personal custody. Quote, "The strong, masterful personality of Holmes dominated the tragic scene, and all were equally puppets in his hands." Again, that notion of the stage play, the puppet show almost, with Holmes as the master.
Yeah.
These ruffians coming from South Africa, you know, have been, you know, hewn by the untamed wilderness. They come and they've got this guy in a suit who's going to tell them, "You will be detained." And they're like, "Yeah, we're going to be detained." Oh my goodness.
Well, they recognize the name of Sherlock Holmes.
Mr. Carruthers was the mysterious man in the false beard who is tailing Violet, who started this whole mystery. He says he was keeping an eye on Violet because he knew she was in danger from the plot of these two other guys. Her uncle Ralph was wealthy and ill, and she was the next of kin. The plan was for Woodley to marry her and for Carruthers to get a plunder of this.
And it's interesting because Carruthers says to Watson and Holmes, you know, "Look, I loved her. Like, I was just trying to protect her." "Well," said I, this is Watson, "you call that love, Mr. Carruthers, but I should call it selfishness. Maybe the two things go together." Well, that's interesting, right?
That's like, a Doyle message like, right there.
Mm-hmm. What is the nature of love? It's and
let's then, unpack that, right? Lay back down. Mm-hmm. Therapy session is exactly.
And then as we go deeper into the plot, which was, I mean, Carruthers and Woodley were in this plot together. So now he has fallen in love with her, but he was part of the plot. And they were like, how did you guys decide Woodley should be the one to marry her? And Carruthers says, we played cards for her on the voyage. He won. Whoa.
Yeah.
Like,
So, as if she has no choice. Well, we haven't found
right.
out.
They, before they even meet her, before they even get to the shores of England, they have decided this is her fate. This is what's going to happen to her. She has no choice in this.
Right. And so before they even see that she's this beautiful, athletic young woman, they are after her for her fortune. And they feel perfectly justified in betting for her as a prize in a game of cards. So this is as lowly ruffianism as we're going to get in any of the stories.
Okay, good. That makes me feel better that this is as bad as it gets. Because this is pretty bad.
I'm going to take a shower after this.
Right?
I gotta clean myself up. This is not acceptable.
Right.
Now, it's interesting because I keep thinking of the American Dime novels as we read this and the ending even more than anything else. Now, I kind of liked that since we have been talking, and it's totally my fault. We always talk about the ending of all these stories. This final paragraph opens with Watson saying, in the whirl of our incessant activity, it has often been difficult for me, as the reader has probably observed, to round off my narratives and to give those final details which the curious might expect. Well, I have found his endings to be really quite interesting all the way through, and it was only in The Dancing Men that we got our first sort of dime novel ending where we find out what has happened to each of our characters.
And we get a second time, 2 months in a row. Definitely taking that pattern from those dime novels and giving us the epigraph. What happened after the case?
Mm-hmm.
Tie it up into a bow.
And gives us a moral message, right? And so it's Violet, who is a very lovely young woman, as we know, she inherited a fortune and married Cyril. And Chip, as you referred to earlier, he's like not just an electrician. He's a famous electrician, whatever that means. Right?
Tristan was becoming a thing, and he became the guy for that technology. Back again, we haven't talked about technology very much in these stories, have we? Back again to that idea of the turn of the century and all of the technologies that came out of that amazing Columbian Exposition in Chicago right before the turn of the century.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. I like that. Especially that we did talk about technology a decent amount during Hound of the Baskervilles. We'll keep our eyes open. Yeah. Then we find out that the unfrocked minister, Williamson, and Woodley, our ruffian, they both go to jail for abduction. Williamson gets 7 years and Woodley gets 10. So it's interesting that those sentences are kind of close, right? You would have thought that the minister might have got a little bit less than the actual man who was planning the rape. Did that strike you as interesting?
Well, if we look at prison during that time, it certainly was such an unpleasant place. Any type of 7 years, 10 years, I don't know if it really mattered. Your life, your health certainly would degrade considerably during that time.
Well, of course. And that's why I was sort of interested that the man who performed the ceremony, such as it was, got almost as much time as the guy who had bet on the woman on the and forced her into.
I can't guess too much of that because he was already defrocked for something that he chose to do.
He's a bad guy.
He was a bad guy who got his comeuppance. I'm not going to second guess the sentences on that.
I like that. And then Carruthers. Watson's not quite sure what happened to him, but he says, but I'm sure that his assault was not viewed very gravely by the court, since Woodley had the reputation of being a most dangerous ruffian, and I think that a few months were sufficient to satisfy the demands of justice. The end. So we don't quite know what happened to Carruthers.
Just know nature will come and the vengeance will be performed.
Well, and it's interesting because it seems like even though Watson was like, that's not love, that's selfishness, he does give Carruthers a bit of a break on this whole part of his scheme.
He's at least nice to Violet. He at least expressed his feelings for her in a nice way as opposed to a really violent way.
And he respects her right to control her own body. Because when Woodley says, well, fine, you marry her, Carruthers says, oh, I would love to, but she refused my proposal.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's a huge difference, right? That's, I think, what distinguishes Woodley and Carruthers is that he respects a woman's right to choose.
Yeah. I will say this is not my favorite of the Doyle stories. And I would say this is, you know, if we had to rank them, this would be towards, because it just seems like an odd setup to get to the mystery.
It's a really dark spot.
Super dark, yes.
Yeah.
Sure. This is interesting.
I do want to get a false beard, though, because there's so many false beards. And apparently all false beards are really dark black, like unbelievably yes. not realistic black colored. So I'm going to get a false beard now.
I'm going to do some research on eyesight, because nobody can see through disguises in this world.
So we found a little bit of fun in this dark story, at least. There's some fun in this. Yes, I agree with you. This is too dark for me. If this was the kind of mystery that all of these were, we would stop this project. But we're not going to, because we have some joy, and we could go on to the next story tomorrow. The Adventure of the Priory School, the 28th short story. Isn't that amazing that we're on short story 28 tomorrow?
And, does that mean we're halfway through?
Is that the math?
Yeah. Tomorrow.
That's right.
Tomorrow means if we have 56.
Wow. Yep. How exciting for us. I hope everybody out there is as excited about this as we are. I hope you're listening along and reading along before we ruin these stories for you. Follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes for all the feedback from around the world. And are we going to ask the Harry Potter question? You'll have to tell me what the Harry Potter question was, because I don't know what anything about Harry Potter. What was it?
So the question is, which house does Watson belong in the Harry Potter universe?
Or feel free to disagree that Sherlock is a Slytherin. So which houses would you put both Sherlock and Watson in?
I will put that onto social media and wonder about what the heck any of it means, because I don't have any understanding. They're both Jedi. That's
we'll
all
explain
I know.
And we can explain and we'll tell you why you're a Hufflepuff. So
that's right. And we'll go ahead and take 2 points away from your house, Steve. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I assume that is some sort of diss that I'm a Hufflepuff and that's a bad thing, but that's fine.
Being a Hufflepuff is awesome. Are you kidding?
No, Hufflepuff. I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's like we're talking about sports, except it's in a world of fantasy. I love it.
The Force is not strong with them in the Harry Potter universe. Oh,
dear. I'm going to watch some cartoons and feel better about myself. I hope everybody has enjoyed our conversation and answer our questions and explain it all to me, please. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
We'll see you in the future. What I want to talk about, what I want to think of, what I want to